Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Mully and Haw, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
First of all, I speak from not being a great defensive player but having championship experience. I know what the hell I'm talking about. The others got to step up, period. I don't give a damn what you're talking about.
Hey, listen.
Rob, hook me up, Rob.
Hey, listen, let me tell you
Hook me up, Rob.
They got
Big Shot Bob, I appreciate you. B-Shaw, Robert Ory, James Posey.
Don't forget
Thanks
Colvin
for stepping
Dwayne
up
Wade.
When I got double, triple teams.
Don't get Colvin Dwayne Wade carrying your fat ass.
I know what the hell you're talking about.
So listen.
That's from Inside the NBA on TNT, and we are delighted to have on the line Radio.com Sports Insider Brian Scalabrine. Insider Calls brought to you by Pennzoil. Motor oil is made from natural gas. The proof is in the Pennzoil, and Brian joins us on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline, Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Hey, Scal.
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
We're getting fired up because finally it's playoff time. And, you know, as much as the NBA playoffs always seem to be preordained, as if they're laid out in front of you, and over the course of a seven-game series, you're always going to see the best team advance. It's usually something you can count on. We have no idea what's going to happen in the bubble, if there's going to be some kind of magical run, if the negation of home court advantage will have an effect at all, if people will just be lulled into sort of same old, same old. What is your expectation with the playoffs finally upon us?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I don't think Dallas has a chance in the West. I don't think Portland or Memphis on the playing game have a chance. But I think like a good series, like the 4-5 matchup with Houston and Oklahoma City, is going to be an absolute bloodbath. Just because, you know, you got the trade from Westbrook and Chris Paul. You know, out East, I think most of the top teams will advance. But I do think in the second round, you got to keep your eye out on Miami beating Milwaukee. Miami shoots the three really well. They rely on the three. Milwaukee's a team who, if they were at home, I'd give Miami no shot at all. But in this environment, Miami seems like a team that's going to really knock down threes. And if Milwaukee doesn't change what they do defensively, they're going to be somewhat trouble. Now, I get it. They still have Giannis, and they're still like a beast on the offensive end. But I really like that matchup, and I'm looking at that second round in the East as, like, you could see some serious upsets.
Scal, how do you explain what the Phoenix Suns did in the bubble? Undefeated, I'm just barely on the outside looking into the playoffs. But when you look at how they came together under Monty Williams and what Devin Booker did, that was the most surprising thing to me so far in the bubble since the NBA restarted.
Yeah, so I think you could put a lot of things. Like, both guys, they hit their stride at the right time. But here's what you got to look at. Rookie players who made huge jumps. Like, normally a rookie, think about the life of a rookie. He goes to college. As soon as he's done with his NCAA tournament, wherever that's at, they're going right into training. Then from there, they go right into draft. Then they get drafted and they go to summer league. Then after summer league, they're back on and they're training to, you know, like, to get ready for the NBA team. So they're always kind of like just treading water, not really progressing. And some do, some of the elite players do. But that little pandemic has made all these rookies take huge strides. So I think, like, with a young team, these guys taking huge strides. I think Mikal Bridges, his two-way ability, he got rid of a hitch in his shot. And, you know, in the NBA, everyone talks about, oh, this team is good and this team is bad. Man, it is such a fine line when you got a guy like Mikal Bridges that went from one way of a player. He was, like, a fine defensive player, but he needed to take another step in his shot. The pandemic happens, and he's able to redo his shot. Now, all of a sudden, people have to be aware of him. And then you get Devin Booker with just that much more space. So I think and then the addition of and you guys had a Cam on the Bulls, and he just, like, couldn't play for whatever reason. Campaign couldn't play. And then he gets to Phoenix, and he's, like, and found the perfect fit for him. And he's, like, out there making – drive. It seems like he's making threes. He's shooting the floater better. And when you had him in Chicago, man, they couldn't do anything. So probably just a combination of those things. And then DeAndre Ayton took a huge step on the defensive end. And that, all that comes into play when you're dealing with a team that just went 8-0. And I was really rooting for them. I was watching last night's game. I didn't want Portland out. I really wanted Portland in, and I wanted them to play the Phoenix Suns. But when Caris LeVert had that shot and it was running, the clock was running down there, I was thinking, what would it be like to be the Phoenix Suns watching just one shot either go in and now you're in the playing game, or go out and you get on a bus and you're leaving the bubble after winning 8 games in a row? That had to be heartbreaking for them.
I am not enthralled with Cameron Payne.
That he said he's got the body of a
He weighs about 165 pounds. He's got the body of a high school sophomore.
That was the line. That's how he looked at Chicago. Why have the Lakers been so flat? I mean, I get it. They got the top seed. They knew what they had to do, but they were fairly abysmal. I think they went 3-5. They just didn't seem to care. And I know they'll know how to push the button, but is that a good thing?
Well, it's not a good thing, but it's LeBron James is the greatest. He's the greatest flip switcher we've ever seen in the history of the NBA. Like, you have to tell me if you can find another guy who at points can just coast and still sort of. It's funny, I would say this, and people would, like, just throw the numbers back at me, and, like, LeBron's averaging this and that, and I'm like, just watch the games. Haven't you ever seen him in the playoffs? He dominates every possession, and in the bubble, he just looks like he was just out there. If I was a Laker fan, I would not be worried about the results, but I would be worried about this. They can't stop guards. Like, anybody they want can drive to the paint against the Lakers. Avery Bradley out. Rondo is not going to return until sometime in the second round, or maybe even the conference finals. They don't have guys to check guards. And now, let's just say it's Portland. Now, I get it. Like, Portland absolutely cannot defend LeBron James. I already know that. LeBron, you saw Caris LeVert. Like, he got anything he wanted, anytime he wanted. Portland will not stop LeBron. But who's stopping Damian Lillard? And they don't got a single guy on their team that can lock up a guy like Damian Lillard, who can pull up from 30 feet, who can get downhill. So I just think Portland, and if they end up making it, which I think they will, I think they'll beat Memphis. I don't think Memphis is very good. But I think Portland is just going to get downhill on them, get wide open shots. Melo will be teeing them up. Gary Trent Jr. will be teeing them up. If CJ McCollum can get his back right, he'll be teeing up shots. So it'll be really – I still think the Lakers are going to win, but it'll be really interesting because the Lakers just don't have anybody that can guard NBA guards, and it's a guard-driven league right now. But I will say Portland doesn't have anybody that can guard LeBron either.
Brian, there's a feeling that the NBA bubble, the field was expanded to include the Pelicans because of Zion Williamson, and now he goes home after a rookie season, 24 games. He averaged 22.5 points. He had some ups. He had some downs. His fitness and his ability to get in shape, I think, is going to be something people wonder about because of his time away in quarantine. But as he kind of ends his rookie year, what is the lasting impression you have on his rookie season?
So I think he'll be special if he doesn't get hurt. And I'm not a doctor. All that, like, I know what people say, right? It's like they're adding A plus B equals C just because he waddles up the court and he looks like he's out of shape and all that stuff. Everybody assumes that that's going to lead to injury problems in the future. And it could. I'm not a doctor, but I do know basketball. What he does on the basketball court is exceptional. Like, his ability to pass, his ability to create space. You see how he just elevates and he jumps before everybody else. Then he lands. Then everyone else lands. Then he jumps again, and everyone's still flat-footed. So that type of stuff is going to last forever as long as he stays healthy. And I don't know if he'll stay healthy, but if he does, he'll be Hall of Famer. He'll be like a franchise-changing guy. But the only thing that I'm worried about is the amount of babying that's going on with New Orleans and Zion. I don't want to be that guy that says, hey, you know, back in the day we used to do this and we used to do that. But it does seem like nowadays players are just like taking weeks off and they get an injury, they take 2 months off. And I don't know if that's conducive to just continuing to evolve as a player, to continuing to get better. And every time you play, let's go, you guys in Chicago, obviously the Jordan thing, right? Jordan sprains an ankle. He's got a game. He said his ankle was blown up. Jordan is like mentally, I mean, we get it. He's not like any player we've ever seen. But he's like ice hot. I got to play this game. There's a kid out there that has never seen me play, and he's going to go to this game, and he's going to be disappointed. I got to get out there. I got to play. I can't let down the one guy, the one fan, the one kid. Like, the NBA players should think like that anymore. And I think there's some little bit of resolve, because if you go through your NBA season and every time you get nicked up, you're going to sit out. Well, what happens when you're in a playoff series now and you get nicked up? Your mind, you're conditioned to not play through pain. You're conditioned to not push yourself through that. And I'm telling you right now, I've been to 4 finals. I've seen Kevin Garnett walk on the plane. He can barely get down the aisle. The next night, he gets you 36 and 17. So there's going to be times in which you're going to have to mentally push through this. So when is that going to happen with these new age players that sit out when they get like a little sprained ankle and they're out for 6 weeks? They listen, from a medical side, I'm sure that it's the best thing to do, but you're never ever going to get to the promised land if you're not pushing yourself through some kind of injury. So that's where I stand with Zion and the whole, like, where he's going to end up. There's a certain amount of mental toughness that you have, if you're an elite player, that you have to have, because there's going to be nights where you're not going to feel it, but you still got to bring it.
I think Adam Sandler bet on him in that game, if I'm not mistaken.
That was a great movie, by the way.
He was great in that movie. He was fantastic.
Yes, he was. That's who he is. Like, the way he acted in that movie is exactly how he is. So he really wasn't acting. He was just acting like Kevin Garnett.
Well, we'll strip the Oscar. Here's the team that's really confusing to me, and that's the Clippers. I get it, the Lakers, you know, they can turn it on, whatever. The Clippers, are they even there yet? Have they gone through quarantine? Every time you turn around, there's like a different group of players, and somebody's out and somebody's half in, and it's just bizarre.
Yeah, I think that's all smoke and mirrors. I think they're going to be fine. Okay. I have them winning the championship this year, because I think I played for Doc, and Doc, better than any coach, understands like the greater good, right? It's like, all right, if I give, like, I get it, like, Lou Williams shouldn't have went to Magic City, I understand that, but like, if I give Lou Williams this time to go grieve with his best friend or his cousin or whoever died, or his uncle died, he's going to give me something in that fourth quarter when I look to him and I demand more from him. So that's how Doc is. He's a big give and take coach. He'll give you something, let your family, do what it has to do, but then he'll demand a high level of commitment from you. So that's what because from the outside looking in, I would agree with you. It looks kind of like, what's going on with this team? But knowing Doc and how he works, this is his version of, like, I'm going to let you guys do this because I'm going to demand something later from you. And I think the Clippers, they just have so many good defensive players on that team, and they all get after it defensively, and they have enough offensive weapons. When you have, like, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, watch those guys play. They're both trying to one-up each other on who's the best defensive player. So if Kawhi Leonard gets scored on by LeBron, then Paul George takes his shot, and he's trying to one-up Kawhi Leonard. That's a lot different mentality than trying to one-up your teammate on the offensive end, that's like where most teams in the NBA, they settle in on, is they try to outdo each other on that end. I think the Clippers, they try to outdo each other on the defensive end, which that means to me they have the perfect team to stop a guy like LeBron, because that's the only way you beat LeBron, is by, you know, picking him up full court and turning him and making his life just a living hell.
Great stuff. Can't wait for it to start. Brian, thanks a ton. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it, guys. See ya.
That was Radio.com Sports Insider Brian Scalabrine. Insider Calls brought to you by Pennzoil. motor oils made from natural gas. The proof is in the Pennzoil. And make sure you check out Brian's show, Scal and Pals, on radio.com and the radio.com app. A great listen for all NBA fans. Just search Scal wherever you find your podcast. Should be a ton of fun. Look forward to watching some NBA basketball, David.
Absolutely. Now let's talk some hockey.
Yes, we got Eddie O. We've got the man himself, and we'll talk to him next. Maybe, just maybe, he can give us a crumb that will give us hope before the inevitable horrors that are ahead of us. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
I mean, they're, like I said, they're a good team in OZP. They make you work, and well, obviously we want to hold the slot a little bit longer if we're not sure. They were able to get some good chances out of that for most of the game. We're pretty good. Third period, they generate a little bit more.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. That's the voice of Jeremy Colliton, the Blackhawks coach, and unfortunately, the overtime loss yesterday. We are delighted to welcome in Eddie Olczyk. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Eddie. How are you?
Morning, Eddie.
Hey, Mully. Hey, David. Nice to be with you guys. And the first question I have to ask you is, since I've been kind of out of touch with what's the... did Darvish go from the stretch the whole game yesterday?
You know, I think he probably did, Eddie. I think he typically – he does do that a lot. He goes from the stretch. He feels more comfortable that way. I think he's been doing that for a little while, but whatever he did worked, didn't it?
Well, it's good to be with you guys. I came home after the game, and I turn on the TV. I'm like, oh, man, the Cubbies are out, so I'm going to turn them on. And all of a sudden, there's, you know, I see the, you know, whatever. I think it was maybe the sixth inning. Don't quote me on that, please. I have no idea what day it is right now. But I turn it on, and there's nobody on base. I'm like, oh, he's going from the stretch here. And I'm like, wow, that's good. All right, you know, and then I'm like, no hitter. I'm like, all right, let's go, you know. And then I said, oh, probably blame me because Smoke ended up smoking one out of there. So, yeah, so, okay. Well, I appreciate your time, guys. I always listen, so thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You jinxed him. Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, David and I were talking. I was texting him a little bit during the game because I was kind of going crazy. It's just – why can't they just get a lead against these guys? Maybe it'd be a different game, but they fall behind a couple goals. And honestly, I thought that it was about done, to be brutally honest with you. I didn't have a lot of faith, but they came back. Mm-hmm. They come back again. Then they hit the iron, and you're just kind of like, oh, my God. Like, I know I don't want to cut someone off two games into a seven-game series, but it felt so deflating. I wonder how the team reacts to that.
Well, I think it's fair, Mully. The Hawks did play, I think, overall a better game than they did in game one. They took some more chances. The great Pat Foley and I talked about it in our extended open yesterday on NBC Sports Chicago right prior to puck drop. And, you know, I think that, you know, Vegas is a team that you have to, you know, force them to defend a little bit more. You have to... if you need to trade chances every once in a while, because look at one of the Hawks' strengths are trying to score off the rush, meaning going from defense through the neutral zone and then into the offensive zone and then, you know, scoring like the Strom goal with, you know, whatever, how much time was left in the second period. Like that's, you know, I mean, that might be their best strength as a team offensively, because they're not built to grind it out and, you know, play station to station hockey and chip and chase and charge and what have you. So, yeah, it's probably not the recipe for winning throughout the entire playoffs, but in a game or in a series, you might be able to. And I thought that they did take some chances a little bit more. The defenseman pitched in a little bit more in the offensive zone, taking position. And, you know, look, they had some chances. They moved the puck around, but, you know, they did have, you know, their Achilles heel, or, you know, not one of their strengths is defense. And, you know, you go from one series against a team in
Edmonton, who couldn't check their hat, to a team that is pretty darn good, gives you one and dones for the most part. Going from game one to game two, the Hawks did a much better job of having some presence and wanting to play inside the dots and understanding this is how you're going to have to play against Vegas. So I think, Mully, that it was a game that they performed better, but you're right. If you keep chasing the game, you know, it just makes life a little bit more difficult, and then it puts a lot of pressure on Corey Crawford, and you know, eventually you lose the game in overtime on a, you know, on a long change. You had some tired guys out there, and you know, you turn the puck over a couple times, and then Jonathan Toews lost his check in front of the net, and Riley Smith, who's played pretty darn well for Vegas, puts the puck in the back of the net.
You know, Eddie, we have breaking news here on the Score. Jim Boylan is out as the Bulls coach, is on their Twitter feed, and we will talk to Casey Johnson at 8:40. And that's big news in Chicago, as you know. So that's another coaching change to deal with. But we'll keep you, because we want to get your perspective on what the Hawks can do to be more aggressive, to make sure that their season doesn't come to an end this weekend. If they lose two in a row, it's over. And what they can do to avoid the sweep. What's the biggest number one thing, if you're coaching this team, that they have to do?
Yeah, well, I guess on the news back home, I don't think I'm surprised. I doubt that you guys are, right? I mean, when you make wholesale changes up top, eventually, you know, you're going to get massive changes that trickle down. So, you know, good luck to Coach Boylan, but not surprised there. As far as, you know, this series, yeah, there's no doubt. Tomorrow night, primetime on good old Channel 5 NBC at 7 o'clock Chicago time. It's a must game for the Hawks, right? Like, it's an absolute must. So, look, you got to be airtight. Corey Crawford's got to be airtight, David, to the heart of your question. And then the Hawks have to be able to get a lead. And you're going to have to take some chances. And, you know, maybe you give up two-on-ones. Maybe you give up a breakaway. But again, I think playing your strengths to give yourself any opportunity, and I think you got to empty the tank on your big guys. I think Patrick Kane needs to play a little bit more. I think you need to give some more ice time to Jonathan Toews, Dominic Kubalik, and I would play Duncan Keith. You know, I would play Duncan Keith 28, 30 minutes tomorrow. That would be my plan. So in a nutshell, David, those three things. Corey Crawford's got to be airtight. Take some chances, and I would play your big guys as much as you can, because then you turn around the next day and you play less than 24 hours in game four.
I got to tell you, I thought that he kept them in that game later on, but there was a softie. There was a fairly soft goal that was allowed earlier in that game, and I think that's what you mean by airtight, right?
Yeah. You can't. I don't know. My feeling is that I need to be PC here, the world that we're living in. My feeling is that this team can overcome a soft goal, but the percentages, I think, will even out. Mully, if that makes sense, where, you know, if you get a soft goal every game, and so far Corey Crawford's given up, in my opinion, a soft goal in each game. Playoff hockey, you know, that can't happen, right? Like, one, okay, but you're right. The score I thought was flattering on in game one. Vegas probably deserved a little bit bigger of a score, but it doesn't matter. You just win the game. Last night, again, much closer game, and when you do chase the game and you give up a soft goal, you know, to the fourth line, especially, you're talking about, I think, the Nosek goal, where it went under his, you know, in between his blocker and his right side. I mean, again, that's got to be stopped. So, yeah, airtight, absolutely. The defense obviously has to be better. Spend less time in your own zone and give yourself a much better chance to win a game in the series.
Eddie, love watching you guys with Pat and everything, because it's like you're watching with a friend. And at one point, I think you said something to the effect, when the Hawks were cycling around or passing one too many times, you're like, somebody want to shoot the puck, please. And I think that's the sense you get from watching this team, is, boy, they do a lot of things right, and, boy, they're pretty to watch. But just sometimes shoot the puck.
Yeah. Well, again, it was one of those things where I thought they bypassed a lot in game one, David. And as you know, if you don't shoot it, then those second and third chance opportunities are never going to happen. And, look, just in the first period,
Carlson had a chance, Nylander had a chance, Strome had a chance, and they all deferred. So even if you take, even if one guy shoots the puck, that's one more shot on goal that maybe turns into a second or third chance opportunity. Now, if two guys do it, think of it, just do the numbers. So sometimes they try to pass the puck into the back of the net, which sometimes happens, but in playoff hockey, it's not going to work. And I, there's no doubt. I know Jeremy and his staff are telling the players, look, at fire the puck, please, you know, but sometimes players just freeze and they want to pass it into the back of the net and look for the pretty goal. There's very rarely. I mean, I know that Kane goal, the Strome goal last night at the end of the second period was that was a beautiful goal. It was an unbelievable pass by Kaner. You know, those happen, but they don't happen as much as people think, especially come playoff time. So, yeah, I mean, this one I saw, because we talked about it in the open, David, and then it happened with Carlson, and then I think somebody else denied an opportunity. And, I think what I wanted to say is, look, if you're not going to shoot it, I will. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to defer. I mean, shoot first and answer questions second. Like, that's the mentality you got to have come playoff time. And unfortunately for the Hawks, they turned that down, turned a couple of those down early in the game. And it also puts, as you guys know this, you can use the, you know, different comparisons in sports is, like, if the team knows that's the mindset, the opposite team, Vegas, if they know that that's the mindset, you know, they're going to, you know, they may be a little less aggressive on you, right? Like, if you put the ball in the air a couple of times, right, maybe you might loosen up the defense, right? If you just keep going run, pass, and you become predictable, okay, well, then, you know, that's easy. But if you pass every once in a while, they're going to go, oh, wow, well, we got to respect that. Well, you shoot the puck, the teams are not going to be able to, you know, read those passes that you might want to be making. But I thought they did a better job all in all compared from game one to game two.
You know, I thought it was important that Patrick Kane had a good game. And,
yeah,
and I
yeah,
thought he
yeah.
was very dangerous. And, you know, the yeah. old hockey adage, your stars have to be your stars. I think he was definitely in that series yesterday.
Yeah, he was. He was. Mully, he had some good jump. Give him another 3-4 shifts over the course of the game. You know, add up his minutes. He had the game breaker look last night. And again, Jeremy bouncing him around. That line scored. The makeshift line of DeBrincat, Strome, and Kane scored late in the second period. And then they came back together like 10.5 or 11 minutes into the third period. Like, to me, you got to get 88 out there. When he's going and he's got, you know, I think he had three apples at that time. He had three assists.
Right.
You got to get him out there. You got him. So to me, as I said earlier, you got to get him on the ice. And look, if he's got to play 24 to 25 tomorrow, you roll him out there and play him with whoever you think. You know, you want to double shift him with Jonathan Toews and you bump somebody down or whoever's going. Get those guys out there, right? Like, just get them out there and give yourself a chance to win and load up tomorrow because, as I said earlier, tomorrow's a must and get it to
it. Sure is. Eddie, thanks a ton. Great catching up with you. Really appreciate your time.
Terrific stuff, Eddie.
Hey, have a great weekend, guys. Look forward to seeing you soon. Be well. Stay safe, yep. Everybody. See
you. You too.
That is great stuff from Eddie Olczyk always. And we want to reiterate that breaking news on the score is brought to you by Pennzoil Motor Oils, made from natural gas. The proof is in the Pennzoil, and the fact is that the Bulls are going to have a new head coach, Jim Boylan. The Jim Boylan era is over. He has been fired. We're going to bring Casey Johnson in next to discuss that. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
Banks it in!
KC Johnson.
Come and get some of this.
Bulls basketball.
Whoa! Stop it! Did not do it like that!
Taking you inside the locker room with KC Johnson.
Oh my goodness! Did you not get the memo?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And yes, indeed, we have breaking news. We have Jim Boylan fired by the Bulls. Breaking news on the score brought to you by Pennzoil Motor Oils, made from natural gas. The proof is in the Pennzoil, and we're delighted to welcome in Casey Johnson. He joins us on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline. Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park. Morning, KC. How are you?
Morning, KC.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Well, you know, I mean, look, I am, to a certain degree, you almost feel relieved because it's not a money issue. There had been a report that it was a money issue, that the Bulls were going to keep Jim Boylan, and now we have a release, and in it, you hear from Arturis Karnišovas saying, after doing a comprehensive evaluation and giving the process the time it deserved, I ultimately decided that a fresh approach and evolution in leadership was necessary. So that is a fair comment, and they did give it ample time. And I don't know how to look at it, KC. Does the fact that we're hitting playoff time, the fact that there are teams now leaving the bubble, does that mean that there could be a candidate that the Bulls are especially interested in that they want to move to?
I think the read is as simple as that Arturis did what he said he was going to do, and he didn't work out of the people's timeline. And in this age of everybody wanting results immediately, everybody speaking in absolutes, Arturis wasn't swayed by that. He said initially when he took the job he was going to take the time to get to know Jim Boylan and his staff and go through a lengthy evaluation process, and that's what he did. I do think in that evaluation process, some other factors and unknown factors came up. I'm in the process of trying to report those. But I said the last time I was out with you guys that, you know, money's only one layer to this. I'm not sure why that got out there because, you know, Arturis was hired during a pandemic, so nothing changed on the money front. The Reinsdorfs knew that next season was going to be financially challenged with probably no fans in the stands. So money was only one layer to this, and Arturis reached the conclusion that he did.
Casey, I think this feels like it was inevitable and also necessary. It gives the Bulls an opportunity to continue some of the momentum and continue the credibility that they gained by making all these changes. And I guess the question now shifts from not necessarily a surprise because people thought this was coming, but who's next? And how will the field expand? Will it be assistant coaches? Will it be former head coaches? What do you think will be the same names that we've heard before, the 76ers assistant Ime Udoka, or Adrian Griffin from the Raptors? What do you expect in terms of a field of candidates, and how soon do you think the Bulls will act?
I think the field, I don't think, I know the field's going to be broad and it's going to be wide. And two names that I am sourcing out that is on a story that posted on NBCSportsChicago.com right now are former Nets coach Kenny Atkinson and Nuggets assistant coach Wes Unseld Jr. I don't want to make it sound like those two are the front runners. I think this, like Arturis has pretty much proven right now that he's a thoughtful and deliberate decision maker. So I believe that it'll be a broad search. But I do think players, those two candidates might, if you want to extrapolate this to a larger point, might fit kind of the person that Arturis and Mark Eversley are looking for. And that's someone that is good with players and is known for player development. One theme that I think might have been lost a little bit through all this because so much has been focused on the Jim Boylan situation is how much player development is critical to these guys' vision. And if you look at that Nuggets roster that's playing in the bubble, that roster screams player development to me. You got a lot of second-round picks, guys that weren't expected to be in the league maybe, even playing major roles for a playoff team. You got a roster full of young, athletic two-way players that really the Bulls roster, quite frankly, lacks. So that would be kind of the overall themes that I'd probably be searching for is coaches that connect with players and are strong on player development.
What does that say about the players that are currently on the roster?
I'm sorry, say that again, Bobby?
I said, what does that say, the idea of player development about the guys on the roster? I mean, when you look at them, there's not a lot of movement that can be made with these guys. Are they going to try to improve what they have here, or are they going to be doing other things to get players in that are more, I would have to say kind of balanced in terms of their games?
Yeah, I mean, I think initially I think player development will be player development is always going to be a strong focus. But I think initially for this season, when your roster probably is limited, if Otto Porter Jr. Opts in as far as what changes you can make, I think the internal improvement and kind of assessing what they have will be the initial focus. you know, as you move into next summer and you have contracts coming off the books and, you know, you've had a chance to evaluate the roster, you know, I think then some more significant changes might be coming. And, you know, this is going to be a process. It's not like you can just come in and just change the roster overnight. But I think if you look at that Nuggets roster, I know Arturis' vision is a big part of that. And obviously Tim Connelly is too. He's head of basketball operations there and the coaching staff all the way down to Mike Malone. You know, but I think that's going to be really something that they're going to work on is developing the young talent on this roster. And I think the coach, whoever they bring in, will play a big part in that.
KC fits into the narrative of AK being a deliberate decision maker and thoughtful guy when it comes to these relationships. Also, you've been consistent with saying he's a players guy. He wants to listen to players and be that kind of an executive. Do you think that the feedback from players was, in fact, that a change was necessary and this is responding to that as much as anything?
I think that's one part of it. I think this is a multi-layered decision. I think the fact that, first of all, everybody thought that this was going to happen at some point. The longer it dragged out, it certainly there was more evidence that it might, you know, he might give him the 19-20 season to evaluate him and then make the big change in the, I'm sorry, the 2021 season and make the change in the 21 off season. But, you know, all management regimes typically like to bring in their own coach. I mean, to this many times, but, you know, John Paxson fired his former teammate and Bill Cartwright to bring in Scott Skiles. So everybody expected this to happen. I always questioned the long fit. The longer it dragged out, I too thought that it would probably move into next season. But the player feedback was one of them. You know, I haven't made a ton of calls on yet this morning. I mean, so the reporting that I've done to this point is where it stands. I mean, the player feedback is well documented and has been reported already as not being incredibly favorable to Jim. I mean, you didn't even need private Zoom calls for that. I mean, some guys went on, you know, the record last season with some frustrations. And then obviously you've got guys playing video games on Twitch saying bad things about the coach. So it was broad based, but I think it was a combination of factors. I think it was, you know, our Jim doesn't really maybe fit Arturis' vision for how he wants to play. The player feedback would be another element. As I said all along, the money was only one factor of the decision because nothing changed. Arturis was hired in a pandemic and it's still a pandemic going on. So, you know, we'll have a chance to interview Arturis at some point, I'm sure, on this decision, and we can ask him more specifically about that.
You know, when we think about player development, when we think about the Bulls, do you see more hires? I mean, you know, obviously there's, you know, guys, whoever's the coach is going to want to bring staff members. They were talking about more hires in the front office. How advanced will this get?
Well, I mean, you're going to probably, you know, most head coaches are going to want to bring his own staff in. So now you're looking at assistant coaching hires. I know for a fact that Arturis has a strong relationship with Chris Fleming, who's the lead assistant. I'm not saying Kenny Atkinson's candidacy gets a boost from this, but Kenny and Chris were college teammates. Chris worked for Kenny in Brooklyn. So if Kenny Atkinson ends up being the guy after a broad search, you know, I think Chris's chances to stick around are pretty strong. The initial hires, the flurry of hires and moves were exactly what Arturis wanted to do to address the situation initially. I know for a fact they're going to want to build out the player development staff. The timeline for that and when that happens, I'm not sure. They made the one high-profile hire in Pat Connelly as a VP in that department. But timeline for further hires, I'm not sure.
KC, thanks a ton. We really appreciate you jumping on.
All right, guys.
Stuff, KC.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Take care. We'll look forward to reading your stuff on NBC Sports Chicago. And David, Adrian Griffin has been mentioned, but apparently within the last day, his ex-wife Audrey has made some charges of domestic abuse. I don't know how that will get in the way of any potential hire here in Chicago, but I would imagine that would all have to be researched and looked at. And that
I saw that. Yeah, that was a Yahoo Sports story, I believe. Adrian Griffin has a has a past with Karnišovas, and you wondered if that would factor in. And this latest news and development is troubling, and you don't know where that is headed. Kenny Atkinson, Mully, is a very interesting name. He did a nice job with the Nets. He's got a very good reputation in the league, and he would be the kind of guy in terms of player development that has a kind of history and pedigree that the Bulls might be looking for. So that would be a good fit in my book. And I think that today, look, anybody surprised? Really, we're not, are we? You thought this was coming, aren't you? Didn't you?
Yeah, listen, I don't celebrate someone losing their job. You know, I don't sit here and say, you know, wow, fantastic, great stuff. But I do think that there'll be a lot of people that will feel relieved about it. There was a sense that Jim Boylan was not a great hire and wasn't going to be the guy going forward that would give you the confidence and all the changes that were made. So I think if nothing else, you do have a good sense that this is someone else's show now. Things have changed. And, you know, again, Jim will be taken care of. You know, the record was never good. I don't know how good the talent was. I don't know what went awry, but it seemed inevitable. And I would say there's almost a sense of relief among most of the people texting us right now.
Jim Boylan was passionate about his job, sure, but he just wasn't a good fit in Chicago, maybe not in the NBA as a head coach. Just seemed a little bit mismatched and maybe overmatched at times. You wish him well, but you don't like to celebrate somebody losing their job. But this move is consistent. And I think it was necessary, because if you're going to have wholesale changes in the front office and do what the Bulls have done, you can't have the same coach that represents what he represented. So this was a move that will relieve a lot of Bulls fans, and it signals the kind of change that they have started and now continue.
And I'm really fascinated to see what can happen next year. What, you know, a new vision in the front office, you know, a new sort of commitment to getting all sorts of player development guys in here, what that means for the team that's currently here. Again, they are very limited in what they can do in terms of adding to or getting rid of players. It's going to, you know, it's going to be difficult to make a lot of trades, and it's going to be no other way of really changing the roster up.
And, Mully, you know, you look at what Monty Williams did with the Suns, a guy who got through to his team. And I know it's just a small sample size, but you see what they did in the bubble and how that team came together out of nowhere. And you do wonder if it's possible for a group of young players kind of coming, you know, maturing at the same time with the right coach. Can they not go undefeated, certainly, but certainly start the arrow pointing up again with the Bulls, and you hope that a new coach can have the kind of impact on the young talent as it develops.
All righty. That is fun stuff. I mean, it's fun to have stuff to talk about, and God knows things are happening fast and furious. Stay tuned. You know that Matt Spiegel is going to have a lot to talk about. Actually, it's Mark Grody, excuse me. Anthony Heron and Mark Grody will be in next for Dan. But I'm sure Matt, wherever he is, will have a lot to talk about. Anthony Heron and Mark will have Ryan Dempster on at 10. And Jason Goff can give you some insights at 11 a.m. I'll be very curious to see what Jason thinks.
And I think Dan Bernstein is guesting, making an appearance at 9:20 to weigh in on his thoughts on the Bulls and Jim Boylan. And Mully, have yourself a terrific, not a terrific weekend, but I think we'll be thinking about you this weekend. All the best for safe travels for everybody. Thank you, buddy. And God bless the family.
Yeah, my oldest daughter, Caitlin, is going off to college, and, you know, we can't go with her. She's going to Canada. We're not allowed in. We get to drop her off at the airport. We can't even walk into the airport. But that's just as well, because my public weeping needs to be limited to, you know, just the
private,
the inside of the car. That's right.
You'll do your public weeping in private.
I like to publicly weep privately all day long. All right, David. God bless you. Have a great weekend yourself. Want to thank everyone connected to the show. Thanks for calling, texting, emailing.
Most of all, thank you for listening.
Means a lot to us. Thanks to Dustin Rhodes.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men, so I'm trying to prepare them for the road. And that's my job. That's what I've been asked to do.
What?
Our thanks to Kevin Zipak.
I don't like him alive, but he okay.
be okay. And Ray, God bless you, Ray. You're the only thing that keeps me going.
Yay.
All right. Great stuff, David. God bless. Molly and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
That segment brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
End the story.
I see you soon, baby.
If it is to be said, so it be. So it is.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.